The University of Illinois, in cooperation with Parkland College and Boardman's Art Theater, is sponsoring the second annual Tournai French Film Festival, which will be held at Boardman's Art Theater in Champaign on Friday, October 13th through Thursday, October 19th. Six French films, Clean, The Far Side of the Moon, Little Jerusalem, Mondovino, Kings and Queen, and Wildside will be shown throughout the week. My name is Maeve Riley, and this is Focus 580. Today I'm joined by Professor Maggie Flynn, Assistant Professor of French and Cinema Studies at the University of Illinois, one of the organizers of the local Tournai French Film Festival. We'll be discussing the lineup for our film festival and French film in general. You can join our conversation by calling 333-9455, that's 333-WILL, or toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Bienvenue, Maggie. Thanks for joining us.
Merci. You're going to get me. My language is confused.
That's it. That's all. Now we're going to English.
Okay.
Okay. Before we start talking about the films, I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about the festival itself. This festival is a national event, and how did it come to the U of I?
Well, actually, the Tournai itself has been around for about 10 years. This is a grant program that is funded by the French government, and it's open to colleges and universities all over the country. Not all of the individual festivals will be happening at the same time, nor will they have the same size or shape. I think each university and college kind of adapts it to their own situation. So last year we just it's the second time we're doing it here in Champaign-Urbana, and it was kind of a happy coincidence some very energetic, bright people at Parkland and Boardman's and I just kind of happened to work out in the right place at the right time and said, yeah, let's do this. And it worked out pretty well, so we're doing it again.
That's great. Yeah. And you get to choose from a long list of films, and you've chosen six this year, which is one more than last year.
Yeah, actually one more than the grant funds us for.
Oh, so okay.
we're getting ambitious.
And what? How do you pick those films?
Well, between myself and a lot of people on the organizing committee, we tend to do a lot of traveling, and we catch these things either at festivals or in their initial release in Europe. Some things the theater can get advanced screeners for. So through the summer, in particular, once the list of participating films became available to us, we started tracking them down and deciding what we liked, what we thought. We try and make a balance of, different genres, trying to get, obviously with five or six films, you really can't have something, you can't have one of everything, but really to get some sort of representative cross-section nonetheless. Mm-hmm. There are sort of much more comedic films, much more dramatic films. We have a documentary. We have a Québécois film. So we kind of try and be as over the all over the map as we can be with the limited numbers.
Okay. And you mentioned this is a partnership between the U of I and Parkland. Mm-hmm. And so students from both schools.
Yeah, indeed. Actually, one of the questions I get most frequently asked is, how do I buy a festival pass? Because people want to buy one pass that gets them to all the movies. But because of the origins of our funding, what we do is there will be hopefully about 1,500 students who will be actually attending on the films for free, because in addition to the grant, we have different departments and units at Parkland and the U of I that also contribute significant amounts of money to pay for to actually bring the physical film to town. And we do that. There's a lot of curricular tie-in. Students will be going back to their classrooms and talking about these things and writing papers about them and so on. So we kind of have a little bit of a different organization that way. We really like the idea of getting the students into the community and bringing students from both campuses together in almost the geographical midpoint between our two mm-hmm. campuses. But did I get off your question?
No, that was it.
Okay.
So they'll be doing things in the classroom around these.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for the general public, do you know what the cost of the film?
It's basically, for simplicity's sake, for everybody's peace of mind, we stick with the regular Boardman's entry.
Okay.
prices, which range from, I believe, well, the average is something like $6, and give or take a dollar either way. There's reductions for seniors and students that aren't, you know, involved in the classroom stuff. And all of that information is actually on the Boardman's website, which is www.boardmansarttheater.com.
Okay, great. And none of these films have aired in Champaign-Urbana before. Okay. And you'll have other kind of events throughout the week that the for students and the general public can attend as well.
Yeah, indeed. There are several student groups that are organizing discussion groups on the campuses and so on. Open to the general public, we have a panel discussion called Jews and Muslims in France, Love and Conflict in Little Jerusalem. Little Jerusalem is the title of one of the films. That'll be at the IPRH, the Illinois Program for Research in the Humanities, on Wednesday, the 18th of October at 12 noon. IPRH is at 805 West Pennsylvania Avenue. So that'll be a faculty panel discussion. And also, a lot of people asked us last year, you know, how come you're not having post-film discussions? And we figured, gosh, we really wanted to do that, and we wanted to do it this year, and we don't have time in the theater because we want to maximize the number of screenings that we have, and we don't have thousands of spare dollars to fly directors in, although if anybody does and wants to wants to give them to us, we're happy to have them. So what we've worked on is we've been very warmly welcomed by a lot of the cafes in downtown Champaign, and Cafe Paradiso as well will be hosting post screening discussions for a handful of the films, and which films exactly and which cafes will be available on the Boardman's website as well.
And that'll be next week. Boardman will be posting all the schedules of the films and the
events. There's already a little bit of teaser information up on their site, but advanced tickets are supposed to go on sale on October 1st. Second to be safe, but Sunday or Monday, just in a couple days from now, people can buy their tickets with either if they have a credit card or one of Boardman's smart cards, which are great because it doesn't matter if it's a festival or not. You get to save money
That's good. And our listeners can also find the list of films and a link to Boardman's Theater on WILL's website at will.uiuc.edu/am/focus. So we have the list of films there and a link to the Boardman site, but you'll have to check back next week to get the times of each film.
Exact times, yeah, will be available. But okay. Every film does screen four times during the course of the week, and we really like that, both for the flexibility of the instructors and the students who are participating, but also just for the general public. I mean, it's one of my big frustrations with film festivals in general is sometimes you get one chance to see a film, and you know, maybe that's a time when you have to work, and this way you can really kind of pick and be able to see something you want. Each film has weekend screenings and during the week, matinees and evening shows. So hopefully people can, you know, everybody can make themselves happy.
Okay. And you mentioned the diversity of the films that you're presenting and the different genres. Mm-hmm. And is there anything, a central theme or cinematic ideal that makes it a film, that makes it a French film, something that would be part of this festival?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about this grant program is that it's French in the very largest sense of the term. All these films are at least French co-productions. But Mondovino, for example, Jonathan Nossiter, the director, is in fact American. He's an American citizen. He lived in France for a long time. He's a trained sommelier. It's a documentary about the wine world. Mm-hmm. Rather delicious looking film. Mm-hmm. You know, and on the other hand, we had the Canadian film. So that's a film which I think qualifies for Frenchness because it's in the French language, or at least a Canadian French, Québécois. So they definitely use French in this large sense. One of the things that we don't deliberately try and select films with a theme. We try and get the best films and the kind of best combination of genres. But I realized not too long after we had sort of set our choice, that we really had a very strong globalization theme this year, which was completely not at all deliberate. Olivier Assayas is Clean, the star Maggie Cheung, who actually won best actress at Cannes for this film, and she really. It's not just because her name is Maggie, too. she's really amazing in it. I mean, just fragile, delicate. It's, you know, it's a story about her recovery from addiction. But it's, I don't know. I think you were able to preview it as well.
Yes, I saw this film.
She's, I've never seen a film that's kind of had this. It's very fresh. There's not, I've never seen a film that deals with addiction in such a delicate way. And she's luminous, and just amazing depth in this performance. Assayas is somebody who, he's a very well-established director. He's done almost 20 films, if you include his shorts and documentaries. He and Maggie Cheung actually used to be married. This is the second film that they've made together. Irma Vep was the first one in the 90s, also a great film. One of the critics really amused me, says this was one of the most beautiful divorce gifts he's ever seen, this particular film. But, you know, Maggie Cheung plays this character who's very much like Maggie Cheung herself in real life, who's very transnational. She the film starts in Canada, it goes to England and Paris, and, you know, Maggie Cheung is...
she speaks three different languages.
She acts in three different languages in the film, you know, including French, and in Paris with some very well-known French actors. Nick Nolte's also in the film. So there's that. Mondo Vino, which is explicitly about globalization and the tensions between different business models in the wine world. And Little Jerusalem and Wildside both have are about immigration and the place, you know, where France is in a way geographically situated in the world. In Little Jerusalem, the family from which are the main characters are Tunisian Jewish immigrants to France. In Wildside, one of the main characters is a French North African, and the other one is an illegal Russian immigrant. Mm-hmm. So there's really, you know, this is a big issue. Now, Kings and Queen, which is maybe the most Franco-French of all these films, in fact, I think actually fits pretty well also because Catherine Deneuve has a strong supporting role in this. And if you want to talk about international stars, and she also is really fabulous in this film. She plays this psychiatrist, and she's just so just wonderful. The film kind of follows two different storylines, one of which centers on a woman who's it's sort of in a melodrama, a 50s or melodrama mode, a woman who's kind of, well, she's the queen of the title. Their kings are sort of all the men in her life, her various loves, her father, her son. And she's on this sort of quest to have a father for her child. The child's biological father died before the child was born. Mm-hmm. And she spends most of the film kind of trying to get a father, trying to convince her ex-husband to adopt her child, because they lived together for a long time and the child has a good relationship with them. Well, the ex-husband, Ismael, now this is totally into the burlesque comedy. Ismael is played by Mathieu Amalric, who's quite a well-known actor in France and also director. Hilarious. He's nuts. He really, truly is nuts. And he and Deneuve are in have several scenes together, which are just he tries to convince her that women don't have a soul, that men do, and this is part of the, you know, the meaning of life, and it's very off the wall. He breakdances, you know, out of the blue, he starts breakdancing. So it's a neat film because it thinks about these two genre pieces, and it's performing the kind of, I think, because of in a way because of its stars and performing a kind of globalization, or these issues are in there. And then, of course, the last film, Far Side of the Moon, Robert Lepage, the director of this, is somebody who really got his start in theater in the 70s and is an extremely well-respected theater director. In fact, one of his current projects, he's working on doing the staging for the Cirque du Soleil's setting up a kind of permanent show in Las Vegas called Ka. He's working on that, and he's very known for innovative staging, which I think makes him a logical partnership with the Cirque du Soleil. But he's been making films since the 90s, and the main character of this film is a perpetual graduate student, so we hope in a college town this will resonate well, who's really had a hard time getting his dissertation accepted. His dissertation is on the narcissism and the U.S.-Soviet space race. And so it's kind of a play on both scientific and sort of literary psychoanalytic criticism. And it hit maybe a little too close to home for me, but to see his dissertation defense scene, his unsuccessful dissertation defense scene, which of course mine was successful, so that's okay. He travels to, I mean, it's very preoccupied with the world, and Lepage actually plays both the main character and the main supporting role of his brother. So very funny, very quirky. His character is also a little bit nuts. He decides to answer an ad for the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. They want to solicit home movies from humans. The SETI project wants home movies from humans to project into outer space. It's a little like Contact, Jodie Foster, but that kind of concept of we're going to send messages out to space and see. So he gets his video camera out and he starts walking around the film, walking around his apartment, explaining the function of the sofa and the television set. You know, the sofa, this is where you would stay if you came to visit me. And we used to have fireplaces in our living rooms, but now we have television sets. And, you know, so he kind of goes on. It's a very, very quirky, funny look at you know, modern life, really. So they're intense, saturated colors, really, really beautiful. So,
I'm going to jump in here again and reintroduce you. My name is Maeve Ryland. This is Focus 580. And today I'm joined by Professor Maggie Flynn, who's a professor in French and Cinema Studies at the University of Illinois and one of the organizers of the local Tournai French Film Festival. We're discussing the Tournai French Film Festival, which begins October 13th at Boardman's Art Theater in Champaign. We can also discuss French film in general. Maggie's an expert on it. And if you have a favorite French film that you'd like to discuss, you can join our conversation by calling 333-9455. That's 333-WILL or toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. And, you know, you talked about globalization. I just wondered if it's a concern for, you know, French film or film in particular, this globalization trend. I mean, you've kind of touched a little bit on every film, but Mondovino, which talks about the globalization of the wine trade, you know, certainly there's a parallel between that and French film.
Well, you know, film is something which, since its inception, has been extremely international. So anxieties about globalization in a way are kind of heavily ironic in this. But for the French film industry, this has a very particular resonance because of something that is called the French exception, the exception française. And this is a sort of both a kind of... a kind of almost philosophical conception of French culture that is somehow exceptional, different, unique, but also a set of cultural policies that have been in place to, for example, in radio, a certain percentage of music that's played by any given station must be French on French radio. So there are certain, some would say, with meaning. Meaning it in a very negative way, protectionist, isolationist policies. But the French film industry that benefits from this a great deal as well. There's a system called the avance sur recette where films can receive funding based on projected ticket sales. And this is a really big, a very good opportunity sometimes for first-time filmmakers to get large subventions, funding from the government to make their films. But again, with the European Union, co-production is very, very present. But because of these bundle of cultural policies, and because of French's relationship to its colonial past, it's a very charged issue. And of course, you know, French national identity being very tied up with, you know, not being the United States, of course. And Mondovino, Mondovino is indeed very preoccupied with this explicitly and amusingly, because it's not what you would expect in the sense of, you know, French people saying French wine needs to be protected and French wine is the best, and Americans saying, well, they need to modernize. And it's not just an older generation saying terroir, the idea that wine has, and other agricultural products have the taste of the land. It's not an older generation being for terroriste, playing on terrorists. one of the characters actually calls them. And a younger generation saying, no, that's bad. It's all over the place. Uh-huh. People on both sides of the Atlantic, and the film does travel to Italy and Argentina, right, and Brazil as well. The Mondavis are big players in the film, and some of these people really play true to form, and they're exactly what you expect. Mondavi's talking about themselves as the brand, and so on.
And they're the California winemakers that kind of they have
kind
a lot of wines.
Have their finger in every pot around the world. Although they have since since the film was made, they were bought out by an even bigger company, and so. Because of, again, the French gastronomy and the wine world, you know, it's a very, very strong heritage and very much a part of you know, what people think of as Frenchness, whether they're French or not. It's pretty highly charged and does have a lot of, causes a lot of anxiety for people. But the documentary is great because it really... it's done with a small digital video camera, so it's not super high gloss or anything like that. But the camera work is very responsive to, you know, people's dogs and their cats and their fish and what kind of pictures they have on the wall behind them. And that's really very, very humorous. And he's very, although Jonathan Nossiter definitely has a pretty strong feeling, like he does believe in terroir and... he has a position on this, although he's not against modernization either. He's just, I think, for careful modernization, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But, you know, he's very even-handed with kind of catching people on all sides of the issue in their inconsistencies and ironies and silliness.
I did have a chance to see this film, and it's interesting because he does sit down with the Mondavani clan, and he's, you know, he's... enjoying their company. I mean, it's very obvious, even though you know, he enjoys the company of the smaller farmer as well.
And he does in interviews, he said, you know, it was a very interesting experience for him because his father was a journalist and he grew up really all over the world speaking many languages. His French is absolutely excellent. You see it in there. You do see him in the film at times when he's not operating the camera. And he said it's really interesting the way in which people expected him to be who they thought he should be. Mm-hmm. So he was related to very differently with the Mondavis. At one point, someone, one of the Mondavi sons, sort of says, you know, talking about a town in France that resisted them coming in and buying vineyards there. He says, you know, well, there's now a communist mayor. Mm-hmm. And that was it. That was the code word. Automatically, Nossiter's in America, and he must think that the communists are bad. What Mondavi kind of glosses is that the mayor that was being friendly with them and was working with them was a socialist, which isn't exactly a great word in American politics either. So, you know, and then same thing in France and in Italy and so on. So that Nossiter as kind of a player in this film is interesting. He kind of evolves along with people's reactions to him. And I certainly have had that experience as well, you know, growing up, spending a lot of time in France and, you know, people not necessarily knowing that I'm American, and then what, you know,
how do you, what, yeah,
huh, what's up with that? So it's interesting the way in which, you know, we are human and we react to people, and I think the film captures that in a very sometimes amusing, sometimes frightening ways.
And we do have a couple of callers here, so I'd like to get them on. So we have a caller on line two from Urbana. Go ahead, line two.
Hi, I've seen, this isn't a French movie, this isn't a movie made in France, it's in French,
mm-hmm.
by Ousmane Sembene,
mm-hmm.
Mulade.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, it was shown at, it might have been shown at one of the Ebert Fests.
No, actually, it was shown in our festival last year.
Oh, it was. Okay.
It had played for about 2 weeks at Boardman's in the previous December, in the middle of a horrible cold snap, and almost nobody went to see it who should have. And people kept asking Boardman's to bring it back, and we were able to bring it back as part of our festival. And
Then I saw it at Boardman's.
Yes,
I didn't manage to make the festival. But it certainly sticks in my mind. I keep thinking about scenes from it, and it was so visually interesting.
Yes.
The story
yes.
was so amazing.
Mm-hmm. Very powerful.
Very, very powerful. And for those who don't know about it, it's several young girls are fleeing from a purification ritual and ask a woman who's not seen in a great light by the rest of the community to provide them with protection, and the rest of the community has to honor that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, you know, the women aren't too pleased with her because she's standing up, and she's not so sure she wants to do this either. All the ramifications, all the details he goes into are really, really interesting, and I just thought it was fantastic, so I wanted to say that. Are synopses of these films on the Boardman's website, or do you have a website?
Indeed. Yeah, Boardman's has all this information, and if it's not up today, it will be up within the next couple of days. They do have it, and all be there.
They do have, for those who don't know and who are within driving distance of Champaign-Urbana, Boardman's Art Theater has an email list, and they will send
yes.
you an email once a week
yeah.
and to let you know what the current schedule is, because it keeps changing.
Absolutely.
Things don't often, sometimes they're only there for a week.
And sometimes they're able to hold things over, and sometimes they can't, and it's a great, I'm on that list, it's wonderful, it's a really kind of, you know, you know what's going on.
And you can check and see what the film is about if you haven't been going lately and you don't know, haven't seen the trailer.
So, yes.
And also, I'd like to add, too, that, you know, we do have the list on the WILL website. And if you'd like, you can, you know, search on Google, certainly, and find those. And a lot of them do have trailers
mm-hmm.
on the site, too.
Yeah.
So you can kind of get an indication of what film.
Official websites have a lot of information mm-hmm. about the films. And also, if people aren't aware of IMDb.com, the Internet Movie Database, that's a place that's a great tool for, you know, scouting out, you know, viewer reviews and blurbs and so on. But Boardman's does an excellent job mm-hmm. keeping their website updated with what's coming and you know, a little bit links to press and so on like that.
And I hope the caller doesn't mind, but I'd like to get to another call, too, if that's okay. So we'll go to caller number on line three in Urbana. Go ahead, please.
Hi, hello. I'm not what anyone would consider an avid foreign film watcher, but a few years ago in Columbus, Ohio, I was dragged to a movie called Man on the Train.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Man on the Train.
Mm-hmm. That's his local film, yeah.
Which was really, really fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't what I would have thought. I didn't know much about French films.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't complicated or, you know, wasn't
didn't have a lot
head.
Of people talking and smoking cigarettes and being
yeah, that's
angsty.
Right. That's right. It wasn't angst. It was some, I mean, there was a little bit of angst, but there was some action and the dialogue was funny, even though I was in the subtitles, it was still funny.
Mm-hmm.
And, the ending was fantastic and not Hollywoodish. And it got you thinking and the whole bit. And it was really a great movie. And
mm-hmm.
First off, my comment would be to anyone who is interested in seeing a great movie that's not complicated that should check this out. And the other one, my question would be do you know, I suspect you know who did it, do you know if that person has done other movies?
Patrice Seconde, yeah, indeed. And he's a lovely man. I've met him. He's not at all what you would expect for a director who has, you know, a lot of pull in the French industry. One of his films that is really kind of a lot of fun is called Ridicule, which I think just went by the French title Ridicule, which translates to ridiculous. I'm not sure why they, but that's a period piece. He's done a whole series of films that are very often very different flavors and types. I can't think of one that would be. Well, I mean, he's got a good sense of humor in his filmmaking, so I think that's something that does sort of tie them together.
Okay.
And one the caller suggested was called Man on a Train?
Man on a Train, okay. which stars Johnny Halliday, who's a longtime French pop rock star, kind of these days become a caricature of himself in a way. And that's something, actually... not to say we have to talk about these films particularly, but it's definitely been one of my goals in organizing this festival is that, you know, I teach French film. And one of the things I ask my students at the beginning of the semester is, what do you think French film is? And they say a lot of things that we could imagine. These things are
right.
Too intellectual and they're too hard and we don't understand and we have to read the subtitles and blah, blah, blah. Incidentally, just in case anybody's worried, of course, all of these films are shown in their original versions, but they are subtitled. Although dialogue in both Clean and Mondovino is quite multilingual, including a lot of English. In Little Jerusalem, there's also Hebrew and Arabic. But the French film industry really has a very vibrant present that is very accessible, I think, to American viewers. And a lot of these films just don't get the distribution because distributors can be afraid of, you know, people's fear of subtitles, for example.
Right.
And I mean, I think that we make an effort to have films that are artistically worthy. But at the same time, are watchable. I'm a great fan of the 19th century novel, which, you know, is sort of, you know, great art, but a great story too. You know, so I don't think that one should preclude the other necessarily. So that's definitely something. I mean, I think you could probably take your pick of anything we're showing this year and not feel like you've been completely alienated.
Well, thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call. And we do have another call on line one from Gibson City. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yes, first I want to thank you for having a theater like the Broadman, you know, in our area.
Yeah.
And mine is kind of an old picture, and I don't know if it ever would be shown. I think it's called The Umbrellas or Charbel.
Ah, yes.
And it was Catherine Deneuve, and I think it was one of her first movies.
It was very early in her career, indeed.
Yeah, and I was wondering if there would be ever a chance of seeing that.
Well, you know, you'd have to take that up with Boardman's. I know that they are going to be showing a little bit later this year. I think it'll still be before December of this year. Jean-Pierre Melville's Army of Shadows has been re-released in a restored print, which I've seen and is gorgeous. That's a film about the resistance. In World War II, the French resistance movement, the Maquis. You know, Les Parapluies is a de Cherbourg, the Jacques Demy film. Jacques Demy was one of the great, great directors of the French musical. And really, the French musical is something, a completely different animal from the Hollywood films. You'll remember that all the dialogue in that film is sung. And it's not, you know, big production numbers. It's kind of a drama. It's bittersweet. It doesn't necessarily have, well... Maybe it has happened.
Well, good. That sounds like something I would go to. And I don't go to a whole lot of cinemas per se. I'd go to like the Broadmans and see something different. And I just really...
Well, we're so delighted that they've been... I mean, they've been amazing to work with on this. They put all these staff hours in and... really carry this. We absolutely couldn't do this without them, and they do a wonderful job keeping independent and foreign film, you know, present in our community, in our cornfield.
Well, I just want to say thank you for what you're doing too, because I do think it's important that we go beyond our borders and see other films.
Well, thank you.
And thank you. Okay. And I'll just hang up.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. And speaking about going beyond our borders, I wondered if you could touch on one of the films that you're showing, which is called Wild Side.
Yes.
Which is by directed by Sebastian
Lifshitz. Yeah. Okay. Wild Side is first of all, has one of the most famous and most celebrated cinematographers in the French industry today, Agnès Godard. Lifshitz is his third feature-length film, and the film is about a transsexual prostitute, and this character is played by a non-professional actor, Stéphanie Michelini, who is really does an amazing job. I mean, I was shocked that she hadn't acted before. Sébastien Lifshitz met her after several unsuccessful casting calls. He was very concerned about actually having a transsexual play the transsexual, and just hadn't found anybody that he thought was right, and happened upon Stéphanie. And Stéphanie lives in a kind of unlikely, or maybe very likely, trio, along with a young North African French man who... French of North African descent, who also turns tricks, and Mikhail, who's a illegal Russian immigrant, and they're a trio. They're all lovers, and they have a very tender sort of support network amongst each other, which is shown because the kind of motivating thing that mobilizes the plot is that Stephanie's mother is dying, and she has to go home to the to her provincial town and kind of confront parts of her past and who she was as a boy, what her relationship was to her family. And the three of them kind of come and go between Paris and the province. The temporality on the film is not necessarily immediately obvious, although it's not so abstract that it's hard to follow. At least I didn't find it hard to follow. But they're all very marginal, and the film is really concerned about marginality of all sorts. But at the same time, not, although as you can guess from the description of these people, these aren't, you know, what you immediately imagine people in the mainstream, and yet it's about their daily lives. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm taking this from interviews with the directors. This is what he was really concerned about showing, that, you know, this is what these characters deal with in their life, and how it's a love story. Mm-hmm. And it's really a very, very beautiful film. The cinematography of Agnès Godard is spectacular.
Okay. And that movie again is called Wild Side. So,
That's the French title as well. Okay. Wild Side.
Very French. And then another film that, you know, talks about people maybe that we don't often see or hear about is Little Jerusalem, about and actually this is about a Jewish family living in
an Orthodox Jewish family. Living in the suburb, Parisian suburbs, and anyone who was aware of the festival last year knows that we showed a film about the Paris suburbs. Mm-hmm. Then when people talk about the Paris suburbs, they do think North Africans, but they tend to think Muslims. Mm-hmm. And Karine Albou, this is her first feature film. She has been very careful, actually, not to say too much about her own identity, and to say that this is not an autobiographical film. She's definitely is not from an Orthodox family. She is of North African descent, and again, a spectacularly beautiful film, extremely well constructed. I saw this one in a gorgeous 35mm print in Paris in its initial release, and which again we will have a gorgeous 35mm print. And it's, you know, people are very aware of the riots and tensions in the Parisian suburbs. Of course, saying suburb for Paris is sort of like saying inner city in the United States. Immigrant communities. Often very underprivileged financially and in terms of class and so on. And the story is really about these two sisters in the family. Laura, who is a university student studying philosophy, and her sister Mathilde, who's married and sort of in a way semi-head of household. And they both have a sort of crisis in faith. Mm-hmm. Mathilde is French-born and has a different relationship to France than the rest of her family. Mathilde discovers that her husband has had an affair, and she's very practicing. She's very deeply religious, and she's not sure how to square this situation with the fact that, you know, here her husband, who's very active in their synagogue, is you know, cheating on her, mm-hmm. and that's. She has to confront her understanding of sexuality and restriction and ritual and duty and they both come up with different solutions to this.
And the other sister's having a relationship
with an Algerian
Muslim.
Yes, mm-hmm. indeed, which causes the problems. The film is supposed to take place in about 2002, which is a time where there were a series of anti-Semitic events which happened both in Paris and in these suburbs. Little Jerusalem, this particular suburb, Sarcelles, was called Little Jerusalem because of the high number of Jewish families that mm-hmm. lived there, that were moved there in the 50s and 60s. And there is in the film a synagogue bombed. You see a mosque as well. These are, of course, you know, like storefront churches mm-hmm. that we have in town here. You know, there's a very Karine Albou is very sensitive to place and the fact that these religious sites can be anywhere, and it's about the rituals and the practices and the beliefs is what makes the religious experience, rather than having a pretty church or mm-hmm. a pretty synagogue with, you know, the right kind of decoration and so on. There were incidents of schools being fires being set, bombings happening. This was in the wake of the Second Intifada. Mm-hmm. And so this is, I'm really excited actually about our panel at the IPRH to hear, because we have people from who work on, you know, specifically on these questions, mm-hmm. Have a much more expert eye on this. I'm the film scholar. I'm not the...
I'll be talking about the religious differences.
Yeah,
in
indeed.
That, right?
And
what day is that panel again? I'm sorry.
That is on Wednesday, the 18th, okay. at noon. At the Illinois Program for Research in Humanities, which is Pennsylvania and mm-hmm. Lincoln. It's not quite on the corner of Pennsylvania and Lincoln. And they have their own website as
okay.
well. So that's a very, you know, it's a very meditative film, but really, really beautiful mm-hmm. and introspective. And, you know, what does it mean to be somebody in a family and in society? And actually similar to Wild Side. They're, mm-hmm. they're very different, but mm-hmm. similar in terms of their preoccupations.
Okay. And I'm going to just give the number out again. Mm-hmm. We have a few more moments here. So if anyone would like to give us a call at 333-9455, that's 333-WILL, or toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You know, we were talking earlier about how it's hard to find time to get to the cinema. So I guess my question is, if someone, you know, is busy but would like to come and see a couple, maybe one or two of these films, which ones would you – can you be a little biased here and tell us?
You've asked me this question before, babe. This is not fair. My answer to this question is a non-answer. I never give recommendations unless people tell me. I always ask for, you know, what other kind of films people like. And, you know, I kind of try and go the, you know, in the video store where they have, if you liked this film, then mm-hmm. you'd like that one. I think people really should, you know, take a look at the blurbs on the websites and kind of go for what seems interesting to them. I will answer for any of these films. I've seen them all. I think they're great.
Did you have a favorite?
Nope.
No.
No.
Okay.
No. And everybody who's been, you know, in the organizing committee as well, I think I'm probably the only person that's seen all of them. But as our TAs and faculty are preparing classes and stuff, there's been a lot of excitement. Everybody who's seen anything has been very, very happy. So I feel very confident that, you know, as long as you make the choice to see something that seems like it might be appealing to you, you're going to be fine.
Okay. Oh, that was a non-answer.
Did I get out of that one?
Okay. And I think you talked a little bit about Kings and Queens, but maybe we need to talk a little bit more
sure,
about that
yeah.
one with Catherine Deneuve. Which
yeah.
is, yeah.
actually, this one might be my favorite.
Okay. Oh, okay. I caught her.
No, I don't know. This one just, it's, the humor is so quirky, but I love the humor in the Le Page, Far Side of the Moon as well.
Uh-huh.
The funny, well, I know I can say that this is the favorite of the special events manager
okay.
at Boardman's, Colleen Cook, who's been moving heaven and earth to get this happen. She loves the film too. So
we'll go on her recommendation.
It's Desplechin has done 6 or 7 feature films. He's quite well established as well. But honestly, I think this is his best. This just really he's kind of kicked it to a new level with this the characters are just fascinating and funny and touching and mm-hmm. It does, you know, I think I said already that it plays on different genres. This is kind of if you can kind of recognize the but we don't really have that much burlesque
mm-hmm.
comedy. I mean, we do have these kind of slapsticks dumb films, but this is much more. There's a kind of really using the physicality of burlesque,
more along the line. I can't remember that Italian actor's name that won the
Nanni Moretti. No, Benigni.
Yeah,
Roberto Benigni.
No.
Well, he's very Italian.
Yeah.
He's very
okay.
Silly
so this is
Italian.
Very French yeah. burlesque.
Yeah, and I had no idea that Mathieu Amalric had it in him to play a nut like this. And it's really not quite clear if he's forcibly interned
mm-hmm.
Against his will by people who are concerned about him.
In an asylum,
mm-hmm. yes. And it's never really totally clear if he's seriously mentally ill or not, but he is kooky.
Yeah.
You know, he's just definitely a very offbeat personality. And so there is a kind of question, you know, does he seriously have a mental illness or is he just, you know, kind of different?
Mm-hmm.
And he's, but he's very, very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
he's a violist, and which is somehow almost funny in and of itself. I don't know why, but you know, violin might not have been funny, but again, he's supposed to be a little bit unusual. Not that many people play the viola. So
let me yeah. get one more call in.
Sure.
We have a caller on line 4 from mm-hmm. Fithian. Go ahead, please.
Yes, my favorite Catherine Deneuve movie is Belle de Jour. I'd like to hear your comments on that, please.
This is very much the beginning of her career. She was, I think, 17 when she did this Buñuel film. Wow, she's beautiful. I mean, that's about all I have to say about that. That was kind of the film that made her. And she's made so many films, and I think that she's just a stunning presence and really has put a face on French film for a lot of people.
Uh-huh. And she's comedic, I think, in this film. And
well, oddly, it is actually a funny. It's a comedic role. She
uh-huh.
plays this very tight-laced but powerful sort of psychiatrist who has these intense interactions with Ismael about whether or not he really should be. He should be locked up or not, and mm-hmm. she's trying to evaluate him. So she has these very sort of terse replies to his kind of delirium of going on about, you know, like I said, women have no soul, which I kind of take issue with that. And she, as does she, in a very kind of arch, oh, really, sort of way. I'm a fan.
Okay. And I don't know if the caller's still there, if you had any other comments about Catherine Deneuve or... No, I think he's gone.
He's gone.
Okay. So, and then finally, let's talk really quickly about The Far Side of the Moon, which you have mentioned a
mm-hmm.
couple times, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just watched the little clip on the internet, and it did look a bit filmed differently, not like a traditional chronological story, or
well, no,
am
no,
I
no.
wrong?
The story, okay. the narrative, the story unfolds very, very, in a very straightforward way. But what I think is unusual looking about it, well, there's archival footage of the space race that is sort of interwoven in there, But there's also a kind of, I guess the closest thing that people might think of would be Michel Gondry's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless mm-hmm. Mind, a kind of surrealist, dreamlike, and of course Gondry's Science of Sleep. He's another one, just like Assayas, French director who works overseas quite a bit in the United States. So The Science of Sleep, which is opening this Sunday at Boardman's. So it is in this kind of surrealist mode, you know, keys start floating mm-hmm. at various moments and very quirky that way. Because Lepage has, you know, got his start in theater and continues to work in theater, a lot of the critics... it was very funny. They felt really compelled to compare this. He adapted his own play for this film, and they felt this compulsion to compare it to theater. And I think that, you know, if you didn't realize that this came from a play, aside from the fact that it's very pared down in the number of characters that actually appear in the film, it would be hard to place because it's extremely cinematic. Mm-hmm. It's just a visually delightful film. And that's actually something that Lepage is known for having brought to the theater as well, again, a kind of visual delight. And and there's a great goldfish. It's very bright, bright goldfish.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing these films, and I'm sure other people in our mm-hmm. audience will enjoy them as well. So thanks for joining us today,
thanks
Maggie.
For having me.
Yeah, I'm Maeve Riley, and I'd like to thank Professor Maggie Flynn for joining me today to discuss the Tournai French Film Festival, which will be held at Boardman's Art Theater beginning on October 13th. You can find information about the films and showtimes at www.boardmansarttheater.com. You can also, thanks to Harriet Williamson, our producer, you can also find the list of films on the WILL website at will.uiuc.edu/am/focus. And thanks very much, Maggie.
Thank you.